Live from Oasis Bar and Grill, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
By the way, slight mischaracterization by Sammy P. I'll explain in a second. Reminder, our 4 o'clock hour every day, and in large part the entire show, brought to you by our friends at Battleborn Injury Lawyers. 766-1400 is the number. You got to dial 775 in the north for our Reno listeners who stuck around listening on the internet. And in addition to the office up north, offices in Summerlin, downtown Vegas, and Henderson. Now, the mischaracterization was when he was saying neither one of us could be basically relied upon as objective on UNLV. I am objective. Like I said, I have a lot of respect for Ashton Genty. I have a lot of respect for the UNLV coaching staff. I think they will come up with a lot of fixes for what happened in the game last year, which includes a good defensive game plan to try to stop Genty. But here's the problem, and this is not a dig on the players. He's one of those guys you can game plan for him, and you can do almost everything right. A few tackles that you miss can turn into 75-yarders. I think he's an all-time running back, and I really don't go overboard often on individual starts. He is freaking awesome. But I do like that Sammy mentioned the quarterback situation. They've got a balanced attack now. I think Haj Malik is still working to his full potential. Haj Malik Williams, quarterback for the Rebels, throwing the ball. The running element gives them something completely different than they had with Maiava. Because Maiava, especially by that time, was a little less mobile than he was early in the season. So
right.
Williams is impressive. And that edge stuff and the ability to throw on the run or just say, you know what, I need 5 yards right now. Let me go get it. I'll get it myself.
It's really interesting because both teams have a different quarterback than last year. And, you know, looking at that box score, they did win the turnover battle. Maiava did have 2 interceptions in that game against Boise in that championship. So we'll see what happens here. But I'm all about the balanced offense, and I bring it up all the time. UNLV is running the football 4th most out of all FBS teams. That is just behind the service academies. So they're doing it very efficiently and using their quarterback, too, mobile. So
I always like to ask, and Alex White's here from South Point Studios. She's on Cofield & Company. As a regular, I always like to ask the people who are really into sports gambling how they look at turnovers. UNLV's plus 12 on the year with turnover margin. And I'm trying to think which fan base. I'd seen a tweet. It might have just been someone who follows college football and creates content. And they're like, wow, turnovers are unpredictable. So it's a game-to-game thing. I don't know if it is a game-to-game thing. I think there are certain teams in given years that are just good at taking the ball and not giving it away. And right now they're on fire. They're plus 12. Only school better is James Madison, a plus 16. And then it's the points off the turnovers, which are boffo. Their difference between what they've allowed when they turned it over and what they score when they get turnovers is crazy.
Wow.
I think the number's plus 67, which is like and that could be 4 or 5 wins.
Yeah.
The difference, you know, when you break it up or break it down. So we'll see. That's obviously going to be a big key here. Both sides are looking at it are like, we cannot throw interceptions.
Right.
We cannot fumble the ball. I would say on the Boise side, we cannot have a punt blocked. Because in essence, that's a turnover. So it's a great matchup. We didn't get to talk in the gambling block there with Sammy about the World Series. Where are the numbers right now?
So we do have the Dodgers are the favorite, minus 130, and that's just really because it's starting in L.A. So this is a pretty even matchup here. Dodgers are minus 125 in game one. The total opened 8. It's now up to 8.5, and that's the only angle I'm really looking at here, Steve, because both these lineups are so good, but they both got here with not their best pitching rotation. So I think we're going to see a lot of runs in these games. I'm going to be honest, I'm not betting a side. I really just want to root or just enjoy these games and see what happens here. But can't go wrong. I mean, this is the ultimate Titans match, right? The best of the best. We have 2 player on each side with 50-plus home runs. They're both going to be the MVP on their respective side. So it's going to be a lot of fun.
I respect Miles Simmons like no one else on this show as a guest. So he better give the right answer. You're a Guardian guy, you know, longtime Cleveland Indian fan. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying you have to be okay with this series because obviously in the AL, you know, the team that everyone loves to hate is the Yankees. But are you okay with this matchup?
I am, yes. And you know what? It's for many of the reasons that y'all were just talking about, right? I mean, it's the two best teams. And rarely in Major League Baseball have we been able to see the two best teams go up against each other in the World Series over the last, I don't know, however many years, right? And, I mean, there are so many series where it's like, I don't even remember who won. You know, the Dodgers won in the pandemic year. Does that even really count? I don't know. You know, same with the Lakers, right? Like, let's see the Dodgers and the Yankees go at it. You know, it's the first time they've met in the World Series since the early 80s. Like, this is going to be really, really good. I mean, Shohei Ohtani versus Aaron Judge, like, you can't really go wrong with that. So, I mean, do I like it also because I now live in Los Angeles? Yes, I do. I think it's fun. Will I go to a game at these prices? Hell no. But it's still fun for the city to be a part of something like this.
That leads me to one of my favorite rants, and I do it probably too much. One, the Yankees and Dodgers, the behemoths, the evil empires, those clubs that spend all the money, haven't played in a World Series against each other in 43 years. So I don't know what that says about money always wins, because it doesn't. Mm-hmm. Do you ever think back, because I did see a little vibe from Cleveland about what was us, little guy. Do you ever think back to what the Indians were in 1997 when Richard Jacobs owned the team? His brother passed away, but those guys owned the team, and they had, I mean, we can go down a list of players. It's crazy. The players they developed, the pitching staff they developed, and had they just spent the money to keep that group together for like 8 years, maybe they win 5 World Series. Like, maybe the Yankees aren't the Yankees if they had kept the whole group together. I mean, it is insane the players they produced. And guess what? While I was listening to your answer, because I did notice that the Jacobs bought the team for $35 million. They sold it for $323. And I wanted to see how the family's doing since, if they are now broke. You know, because they were tight on money at the time. They couldn't spend on the baseball team and keep Manram and Tomy and freaking all the pitching. Look at him just shaking his head. I know.
Well, it's true. I mean, look, yes, the answer to your question is yes. I mean, I can still name, you know, the 2001 Cleveland Indians starting lineup. The year after Manny Ramirez left, they brought in Juan Gonzalez, and he was basically an MVP candidate. I mean, he hit cleanup. He was behind Robbie Alomar in front of Jim Thome. It was great. You know, you just had guys, you know, teeing off. Literally, I swear to you, I was watching Omar Vizquel and Robbie Alomar highlights last night. Because, you know, it's one of the greatest double play combinations that this league has ever seen. And Major League Baseball, if you're listening, you need more Omar Vizquel and Robbie Alomar highlights on YouTube or wherever, right? I mean, like, because those two turned countless double plays from 1999 to 2001, the years they played together. And there are certainly not enough online that we can see. Because I remember there were some really great ones. So, yes, I mean, you really got me in my feels here, Steve.
I'm sorry.
Get me in my wheelhouse.
I know. Well, let's talk about another frustrating owner. We were just hitting on him about half an hour ago. Well, let's talk Jerry Jones and the latest stuff that's going around. Last week it starts with the threat at the radio host. I don't think Jerry got the response that he wanted, which is that, you know, everyone's going to back him. No, you're not winning. You don't have equity. And now the stuff between, I don't know if Aikman was told by Jerry, hey, do me a favor and, you know, go after McCarthy, but now we got McCarthy versus Aikman, and Aikman and Jerry versus McCarthy. It never ends with the guy. I don't get what he wants.
I don't either. And I think if they had had a better offseason strategy, then we probably wouldn't be talking about some stuff like this. Because, look, the NFC is not the strongest conference in the world. I mean, I don't know that the NFL is as strong, like, team-wise as it's been in the recent past. I mean, in the NFC, look, you got the Lions. The Vikings are also really good. But other than, like, the Packers, you can see some things with the Bears or maybe, you know. And that's the NFC North. And, like, everywhere else, you're kind of like, eh. Like, the Buccaneers last night, they go into it, and if they don't get blasted by the Ravens, you kind of think, oh, well, maybe. But then you got to look a few weeks ago, and they just got blasted by Denver at home, right? So it's not like they're really strong teams. NFC West, the Niners aren't as strong as they were. They're broke up all over the place. You know, I don't know who the best team in the NFC West is right now. NFC East, like, oh, gosh, the Eagles? Yeah, I don't know. The Giants aren't good. You do have Jaden Daniels in the Commanders, but now he's hurt. So if Jerry Jones had done more to be quote-unquote all in, right, like he was talking about at the beginning of the offseason, maybe they do go and sign Derrick Henry and they do get taken care of some of these contracts that they should have been more proactive about instead of reactive about, then we might not be talking about this in this way. Or we could go back further, and Jerry Jones could have made a change at head coach, so you're not having these sort of, I don't know, weird battles between your former quarterback, who is an ESPN analyst, and you and your head coach. Like, none of this makes any sense, and I don't know what the larger point is here, but if this is the kind of stuff that is now spilling over into public that really should probably be taken care of behind the scenes, I don't know where the Cowboys go from there.
That's a great question, Miles. We were kind of just talking about this in the last hour. So what's your expectation now for the Cowboys? How many wins are you seeing them get this year?
8, 9, maybe 10. I mean, it's not because of some of the schedule, it's not like they're going to be horrible, right? They're not. But I don't know that they're good. And, you know, 8 or 9 wins might be good enough to get you into a playoff spot in the NFC this year, unless the NFC North just sweeps the whole thing and they're all at 10 or more wins, which not the most impossible thing that could happen. But from that standpoint, I mean, even in the NFC East, like, I don't know, the Eagles. Yeah. The Commanders, depends on how long Daniels is out. So it's not out of the realm of possibility that the Cowboys win the NFC East, right, with 9-10 wins. But I don't know that they're going to be any better than that.
Boy, it is weird right now, isn't it? I watched the beginning of the Eagles and Giants, and I was like, my God, no one can get a pass off. The pressure on both quarterbacks and the pocket, it was insane. And then eventually the Eagles softened things up because former Giant Saquon Barkley went crazy for, 17 for 176?
Yeah.
I mean, this is a serious question, and if I had asked it like 2 months ago, you'd say institutionalized Cofield. Who has a better chance at winning the division, the Eagles or the Commies?
The Commanders, I think, because I think that they've got a better quarterback right now. I think that they've probably got a better team right now. They've gotten off to a better start. I mean, look, do the Eagles have experience? Yes, but there's still some weird stuff going on with Nick Sirianni. I mean, when you are like fighting with fans after you beat the clown ass Browns, you know, last week, like what are you doing? I don't really get that. And then you bring in your kids to the press conference as effectively a shield. Like, kids, I don't like kids in press conferences generally because, I mean, you know, you can say what you want. I'm like, I guess I'm a big J journalist. And like, kids in press conferences do not help me do my job. I think it's frivolous and silly. I understand it more in the postseason. But in a regular season, it's what, week 6? And you're bringing in your kids to the press conference? Get out of here. Don't do that. I mean, I don't like it. I don't understand it. So that to me is where I look at the Eagles and I'm like, I don't really have that much confidence right now in what Vic Fangio was doing over there, because for whatever reason, Vic Fangio as a defensive coordinator has not been as good as he used to be, even though his system was so good. Maybe offensive guys have just solved it. I don't know. But from that standpoint, and also like Jalen Hurts is not playing his best football, and they need him to do that in order to really be a contender in the NFC.
Before we move over to the AFC, I do have a question about an NFC West team, and that is the LA Rams. Ton of injuries for them this year. Now there's rumors, and is this true, that they may be moving on from Cooper Kupp?
I can definitely see them moving on from Cooper Kupp, especially if, as was reported today, they can get a second-round pick. They're going to call that thing into the league immediately. They could not rush that thing in quick enough. And, you know, I was around Cooper Kupp a lot early in his career, and he is such a cerebral player. He's a really great player, good guy that you want on your team because of the way he sees offenses. So if you're Kansas City, right, I don't know if I would want to give up a 2 for somebody who's not played a full season since 2021. However, I do think that, you know, I could say all right, conditional 3, right? And we can move it up to a 2 if Kupp plays X amount of games, you know, sort of you structure it like the Devontae thing, right? Where it's, okay, well, if he's an all pro or if we get to the AFC championship game and he's active, then maybe it can go up to a 2. But that's one where it would kind of stink, I think, for the Rams to give him up. Like, I don't think that's something that they really want to do. But I think realistically, looking at it, if you can get a two for him based on what his production has been over the last few years, you got to do it.
Miles Simmons is with us. I don't know if you put this up on your social media. You may have. We do have a Rams-Giants matchup coming up. And
I don't know
Daniel Jones
is
not playing well. His offensive line, again, stinks, and now it's getting beat up. Thomas is out for the year. I mentioned a number yesterday, and I still can't believe it's accurate, but it is. We keep getting dealt the Giants and the Jets and the stupid New York market, and now Rodgers there in prime time. You know, straight up combined since 2019, first of all, they played 36 games in primetime, the two of them. They're 4-32. They're 4-32! Get them off TV!
Remember when, this is a really big Cleveland thing. Bernie Kosar used to be the preseason analyst on Browns television, and I think it was in 2013 that they were playing the Rams, and Kellen Clemens was playing quarterback. And Bernie Kosar goes, "Bless me, Father, for I have sinned because I got to watch Kellen Clemens play quarterback for the entire fourth quarter." That's how I feel when I watch Daniel Jones. I mean, I don't understand. Like, Mike, he's so frustrating to watch. It's like nails on a chalkboard because you see things that are open for him. And it's like, oh, no, I'm not going to do that. Like, or, oh, I'm just going to sail the ball. Or, oh, Malik Nabers is not there, so I don't know what we're going to do. It's just, it pains me. And they're playing the Steelers on Monday night, which is why I put that on social media, because I didn't realize that next week we're going to have to watch Daniel Jones and the Steelers on Monday Night Football. Right. And Daniel Jones going into Pittsburgh at Acrisure Stadium, where they're going to be waving their towels and all that. And TJ Watt's going to be coming after him, and they don't have a left tackle. It's just like, I don't want to watch that in prime time. I wish they'd flex that game out. I don't want to see it.
Yeah, I get confused.
Play that game Sunday at 1 o'clock on CBS.
Yep, bury it.
Like,
bury it.
Bury that damn thing. I don't need to watch that.
I got confused because you had a McVay, like you said, a McVay gif.
Yes,
talking about watching the game.
Yeah.
So, I don't know if anyone cares, but if people see social media and they're like, "Hey, Miles is on in Vegas," and when they ask you, are people like, "Hey, you doing a lot of Raiders talk?" And you can always answer like, "Nah, not really." Because we do right by our audience. Like, we do care about the Raiders and the stories, but right now, I mean, I expected them to be very iffy at quarterback. This feels like rock bottom. I mean, what do they do from here? And if you're a player on the team, like, how do you get freaking, I guess you want to keep your job and you want Minshew to get better. Or if, God forbid, Desmond Ridder has to play. This has turned into such a mess, and AP ain't helping it with his game management at times either.
No, but, I mean, and Adam Hill, I know, would get mad at me for this. I understood what he was doing with, kicking the field goal to make it 20-15 late in that fourth quarter. And the strategy worked. They got the ball back. But unfortunately, your quarterback stinks and can only give the ball away. And this is why he was benched in the first place. And, you never know what things would be with Aiden O'Connell. He does take a little bit better care of the football, or at least he was trying to. But it's unfortunate, when somebody goes down and you don't even really get to see what they're doing with the offense. And the Raiders don't have many threats at receiver right now. I mean, your best offensive player is Brock Bowers, and he's having a terrific year, but there's only so much that he can do when there's no other real threats around him. So, and when you don't have a quarterback that can, get the ball down the field effectively, I mean, four turnovers from a quarterback, that's really, really, really not good. And so Gardner Minshew, as Antonio Pierce was saying yesterday, he's got to get out of his own way. He can be a solid, productive quarterback. We've seen it. It's just that there are limitations. So how is Luke Getsy going to diminish those limitations, minimize those limitations, so that the Raiders can be competitive and win games? I don't know. I mean, we all knew going into this season, guys, and you guys know this, that this was going to be a year where it's, let's see what happens at QB. And next year, 2025 in the offseason, whether it's by free agency, trade, or draft, that's when the Raiders are going to have to go get their quarterback. We knew it was going to happen, and now it certainly is the case.
Miles Simmons, Peacock, and Pro Football Talk as he's on with Alex White, Cofield. We're live here at Oasis Bar and Grill as we are on Tuesdays on ESPN Las Vegas. I want to hit a couple of games here in a second, but one last note on quarterback situations. What are the Browns going to do here? Because I feel like there ain't much to play for. DTR, if healthy, is probably the guy to get you the goals you want, but he ain't the best quarterback on the roster. I was saying yesterday that I think there should be some interest where from other clubs where the quarterback room is really weak and the starter is the backups are weak and the starter is sort of, you know, week to week. It could be an injury, it could be problems, that Jameis Winston should be of some interest. They probably need to get Jameis the hell out of there so the fans aren't complaining if DTR is underachieving.
I think the fans understand what the situation is now. I mean, everybody would have been much happier if Jameis Winston had started playing in week three. Like, you know, and I kind of give Dave Canales credit for doing this. He benched Bryce Young and said, this ain't it, you know? And because of the contract that Deshaun Watson received, the Browns really couldn't just do that. They could have done it. They should have done it. They didn't do it. So now Amari Cooper's gone, right? You play Jameis Winston the next couple weeks, and maybe there's some interest at the trade deadline, and then you can get a fourth round pick for him or something like that. I mean, that's not the worst thing in the world. And then if DTR's finger is okay by then, he can play. I don't know. It's funny because, and I'll wade into the discourse because you sort of cracked the door open and I want to kick it down. The thing that like is kind of bugging me about what people are saying about Deshaun Watson and the booing and all of that and the cheering of the injury. You can't divorce what his play was on the field from all of the other things that came with Deshaun Watson being on the Browns, right? This is somebody who settled 24 cases of sexual misconduct and assault. This is somebody who came in and effectively replaced the one Browns quarterback that had been able to take them to the playoffs and win a playoff game since 1999. And so there are different factions of Cleveland sports fandom that felt various ways about Deshaun Watson. Not everybody that was 60,000 plus people in the stadium was cheering when he got hurt, right? So there were some knuckleheads that did that. Absolutely. But that's what happens when you get 65,000 people in a stadium. There are going to be some knuckleheads. And, you know, the Browns players that said that it was wrong to cheer somebody who was hurt, I don't blame them. But what you can't do is then say he's been a, quote, model citizen, you know, for his time in the NFL. Get the hell out of here, Myles Garrett. That's not right. So that's where, to me, when folks are like, oh, well, they only started booing him when he played badly. Like, well, what are the fans supposed to do? You know, not everybody wanted him on the team. But once he's there, if you're a fan of the Browns, what are you going to do? You don't have any control over whether or not he's there, whether or not the Browns paid him the most guaranteed money ever. So all of those things came to a head because everybody knows that Deshaun Watson is a terrible quarterback now. And by all accounts, he's also not been a really good person off the field. And he's also shown no remorse for what he is alleged to have done and the things that he settled and what the NFL found that he had done. So all of those things, I think, mean that Jameis Winston is going to get a much better reception when he comes out and is introduced as a starting quarterback this week.
That was good. Griffin, you know what to do with that. That needs more life on the internets after the show. Two games, and I want Alex to pick one. I'm going to pick a game and throw it at you. Alex is going to give you one next. After we started recapping the week that has been for the Cowboys, I still think I'm more interested in taking the Cowboys plus 4.5 against the Niners. Ooh. Am I a buffoon?
No, you're not, because the 49ers have injury issues, right? And I think that Kansas City might have exposed some things a little bit when it comes to that offense. And obviously not everybody's got the defense that the Chiefs do. I mean, Chris Jones is playing at a really, really high level. He's disrupting things all over the place, and we'll see whatever happens with Micah Parsons. And, you know, they've also got all kinds of injuries on that Cowboys defense, but I don't think you're crazy. I think that game's going to be close, you know, for sure.
I'm going to throw a game at you with two teams who have definitely underachieved this year with the Eagles, and you were talking about the Sirianni stuff and the coaching problems, and then the Bengals here. So the Bengals are a 2.5-point favorite at home. What do you think happens in this game?
See, this one's interesting because the Bengals have defensive problems. And, you know, if Jameis Winston had come into that game last week with the Browns instead of DTR, the Browns would have won that game because Jameis Winston actually knows how to have a competent offense. So I think from that standpoint, if the Eagles can get things going offensively. If Saquon Barkley can have another game where he goes off, if Jalen Hurts can get the ball down the field to Devontae Smith and to A.J. Brown, they probably should win this game. But this is one of those that it's going to be close because both of these offenses are going to be able, should be able to take advantage of the weak spots in both defenses. So I'll go with the Eagles in a close one because this doesn't seem to be the Bengals' year.
Miles, the schedule this week on Peacock?
I will personally not be on there, but you can, of course, catch all of the PFT Live content on Peacock and then on the NFL and NBC YouTube page.
Miles, thank you. We appreciate it. We'll see you, buddy.
Thank you, guys. Take care.
There he is up on Twitter, Miles A. Simmons. Really good Twitter account. Obviously gets paid by Pro Football Talk, so they want the clicks. Go read their stories. Florio is a tough guy, and I mean in a good way. He's good. It's real good. Pro Football Talk rules. So go check out the, as they say it, bang it, the rumor mill. Do it. All right, we still got about a half an hour left here at Oasis. We got a lot to get to. A little on UNLV basketball coming up. I got to reiterate something, and I'm going to run it by you, that I said about the Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes yesterday. And the more I've thought about it, I want this to be in the Raiders game plan. It is a must when you play KC.
Now back to Cofield and Company, live from Oasis Bar and Grill on ESPN Las Vegas.
Something to clean up from the conversation with Miles Simmons. What's your reaction to that number I gave about primetime that the Jets and Giants combined are 4-32 straight up since 2019? All those night spots, and they stink. They're terrible every time they play.
I'm not that surprised because it has been a couple rough years.
4-32, though.
Yeah.
It's been like a rough 5 years.
Yeah.
That's shocking. We had Christina win Kevin Hart tickets. We have more. So if you get here before 6 o'clock, we're doing more giveaways. We've got Kevin Hart. We've got UNLV Boise football tickets. We've got Cypress Hill concert tickets. DLVEC is where the Cypress Hill show is. Kevin Hart. The residency is at Resorts World. Tickets go on sale this Friday at XS.com. XS.com. So one set of Kevin Hart tickets going out to Christina here at Oasis Bar and Grill watching Cofield and Company. Okay. So I started on this yesterday, and I was thinking, like, maybe this is too vicious. And then I recalibrated overnight, and I want Griffin in on this because he's a big fella. He played football. He played defensive and at 6'5 and 250. We're going to get his take in a second. Our job with Alex White, she's great on sports gambling and sports. What she's not great at is being mean and vicious. You ever play Powder Puff?
Yeah, I did.
Did you get in a couple of cheap shots? Like outside the rules, or like, hey, you know what? This is all for fun. And then you're like, combining with someone else to like low bridge someone to flip them in Powder Puff.
I don't want to disappoint you, but no.
were you competitive when you played?
Absolutely.
Did you care? Okay.
I actually won MVP my senior year.
You did?
Yes.
Okay. I mean, you were UNLV cheerleader. You ran the cheer squad for a while. There's competition there.
Yes.
Right? I don't want to get into what you guys do to, you know, to take out the opposition. Maybe something dirty. Did you see Patrick Mahomes run 33 yards when he went to the sideline in this last game and then scooted up the sideline because no one wanted to tackle him because they don't want to hurt him? That's not it. They don't want to get a flag.
Right.
What does that make you think? Does it get your blood boiling?
I mean,
especially if you bet the other side and you're like,
yes,
freaking tackle him, please.
Yes. It's hard though. I mean, you see it all over the internet all the time about them throwing the flags and being there and everything going their way. So,
but you can't let down that much to allow a guy a 33 yard freaking run.
That's true. Yes.
What do you think, Griffin? When you watch it, you played defense, you played end. I'm sure you had a lot of encounters where you're chasing down a quarterback or getting close to him. He's clearly going out of bounds. In the case of Patrick Mahomes, it's never clear. Like, what were your thoughts on those plays?
Same thing I've been thinking for a couple years now, which is just that the game of football, at least on the pro level, is not the same sport. It is not the same sport that I played in high school, college, back in 2014 through 18, 21. The game has just changed so much. It makes me sick because football, that was one of the great things why I loved the sport, because it was so vicious, because there was so much, you know, so much aggression and violence in the sport, that that just trickled down to all different aspects of it. So it's just a different sport. I there's nothing I really can say to change it.
Yeah, I mean, it I don't know if Patrick Graham talks like this. I know Max Crosby thinks like this. It is one of my goals going into the Raiders game as a Raiders defensive player. I am annihilating Patrick Mahomes if he goes near the sidelines. And I'll say the other one, the stupid trick he does, it's brilliant, when he reaches out his arm as he's going out of bounds, that cannot be tolerated. And I'll take it one more step. Max Crosby not only needs to have the mentality and instill it in the rest of the defensive players, when Mahomes runs to the sideline and there's a question of whether he's going out of bounds or he's going to stay in, he needs to be crushed. His arm on that stupid reach needs to be crushed. And here's the thing, on the field, Max Crosby needs to say it to Patrick Mahomes. Griffin, right? We've seen in, you know, behind the scenes, it's not even behind the scenes, we've heard him mic'd up on the field. And quarterback last year, Patrick Mahomes, like, he would get in Patrick Mahomes' head, and they would actually practice it. I don't know if you heard that, but, like, the Chiefs would practice having, like, a troublemaking defensive player to bust Mahomes' chops. So, like, stay cool, dude. But Crosby is classic for talking the entire game. I would talk the entire game. Patrick, don't go near the sidelines. I'm going to freaking murder you.
Back
to and get in his head. Because what are they going to do? I mean, are we to the point in the NFL or, like, hostile talking on the field, Crosby unsportsmanlike, 15 yards. Like, they can't regulate that.
I mean, at this point, talking is all he can do because of the rules around protecting the quarterback. I mean, back in my playing days, Steve, shout out to Coach Devin Penny over at Palo Verde High School. He was my D-line coach. We used to have a captain's meeting every week, and the goal for the D-line was always the same. I want to see what that backup quarterback can do. Because the goal was to always go and get that QB, because that's the fastest way a defense can absolutely change a game, is by taking that quarterback out, by being violent, by being within the rules, but by smacking them. And they're not allowed to smack them anymore. So all Crosby can do is talk mess to Pat Mahomes the whole time.
They can do it. You might get flagged, but you have to do it to keep Mahomes and that offense honest. So I'm still into the Chiefs game. I know Raiders, you know, the Raiders right now are very down on their luck. Still a big rivalry. I don't know if all the players hate each other like they used to. And by the way, I love that. Griffin, are you 33 yet, or are you younger? What are you?
I'm 28.
I love, and I wasn't saying you look old. I was just trying to go to a top end. I love that 28-year-old is going back in my day. Like, your day's now, basically. I mean, you're that, like, that's bad if you think the game has changed that much. Right? Back in my day. So I'm gonna tie something together here. Last year for UNLV was frustrating early on because they had the stupid NCAA fight over the Boone Bros,
right,
where Keelan couldn't play, Caleb played. As soon as Keelan came back, the season changed. They pulled off that upset of Creighton. They dealt with that. They dealt with injuries, especially at the end. They got real small. But one of the good moments of the season was San Diego State comes here. And I swear to God, I don't. Why do I have to swear to God? I wasn't in the locker room, and I wasn't at practice in the real active practice moments. I 100% believe that they instilled this attitude that San Diego State plays brawl ball, and we, if you're Kevin Kruger, we are going to match that. We are going to play basketball. We are going to play football in the lane. And I sat under the basket of Thomas and Mack, and I was laughing. I was so happy at the sort of aggression. Everyone was crushing each other, and I think the refs were like, what do we do? We're going to foul out every guy, so they just let him play. And they pounded each other. Now, that was a different group, but here's the thing. They're going to have to be a physical team because that is the way the Mountain West operates. The Mountain West traditionally doesn't get 4- and 5-star 7-footers or 6'10 guys coming out of high school. They get 6'7 to 6'9 brawlers out of high school, but more importantly, they get adult men out of the transfer portal, and this league is really rough. I know people are always like, oh, you know, the Big East and New York and Philly, but, like, they play really aggressive out here. So what I'm building towards is I want to play a couple bites from Bear Cherry. But first, yesterday I was at practice. Season starts off November 4th. Alabama State is in town. There is a special early in the season, very inexpensive tickets at UNLVtickets.com. They played a scrimmage the other day. They played San Diego. They put up some big numbers. They didn't put out a box score. Or they didn't even reveal the result of the game. But there were guys who put up numbers. And I just, in general, was asking Kevin Kruger what he thought about this scrimmage against San Diego.
I thought our effort was really good. I thought we played hard. But, again, we just got to communicate. It's not easy to talk in loud environments to begin with. But if you're not going to talk at all, it puts a lot of pressure on each other to do what's expected, and that's the most important thing. Is you gotta do what your four teammates are expecting you to do, and communicating and talking is what helps the most in that regard.
Bear Cherry put up some numbers. Were you impressed? Was that a good performance for him? Is that what you expect?
No, I thought it was a really good performance for him. I thought a lot of guys played well, especially statistically. Not turning it over. We got up a bunch of shots. We rebounded it well on both ends. So, on the stat sheet, I thought it was pretty good. But there's still a lot of things that we can tighten up, which is good. The secret scrimmages, to get in an organic situation where, possessions are important late and is all the value I think you can really get out of those. So win or lose, to be able to get in those situations, have those timeouts and have those possessions where, there's a win or a loss on the line is I think safe to say that we got everything out of that scrimmage that we wanted.
DJ put up some big numbers. What's the balance in year two where maybe you tell them, hey, you need to be more offensive minded versus distribution? How do you control that kind of going into games?
Well, DJ is he's a traditional point guard. He judges himself on wins and losses. So yeah, I think there's definitely going to be, as he can just continues to physically get older, I think more of the offensive playbook will grow for him, and he'll be able to continue to do things better as he just gets stronger and older. So, his instincts are his best trait by a mile. As good of a player as he is, and as good of a shooter as he is, and decision maker, blah blah blah. But just him, just his basketball instincts kicking in are what make him who he is. So I just think as time goes by, it'll be one of those things where he'll just continue to be aggressive and figure it out. But we got a number of guys that can handle the ball this year and make plays. So that's what's most exciting about the roster.
I think fans can expect a monster season from DJ Thomas, but he's going to need help, and they're going to have to be physical. Like I said, they had to. They have some bigs to build around. Some unknown guy in a Benarbi. Bear Cherry was brought in, 6'11", listed at 280. We asked him at media session yesterday, the new big man, to give his thoughts on the game against the scrimmage against San Diego.
I had a great time. It's been a little while since I played. It was good getting out there with the guys. It was good to see where we were at. Some mistakes that we had to clean up, but I think overall we looked really well, and I think we could have a great run in the tournament. So,
what were the mistakes? And Kevin Kruger talked about communication. You guys aren't communicating enough.
Yeah, so we need to talk a lot more. And they both tell all the coaches tell us that we need to. It's more like we don't communicate and we play hard, but then people are in the wrong spots. So I think that communication is probably the biggest thing that we need to do right now. I think I bring a lot of energy. I'm always hyped no matter what. If I'm playing bad, playing good, it doesn't matter. I'm going to be a great teammate. My dad is always – I have an older brother too. I've always been taught that. So I'm a big presence down low. It doesn't matter. I don't need the ball. I'm here to help everybody. So I think I bring a lot.
Good attitude, right? I don't need the ball. I think they're going to want to pitch him the ball to keep the offense honest. And if he's got an offensive game, that's only going to help. I mean, last year, Caleb Boone, and I'm not saying Bear Cherry is Caleb Boone, but Caleb Boone, the true big of the Boone brothers, man, when he was going really well in the post, it changed the whole look for the game. So I mentioned the Boone brothers, and Caleb Boone, 6'9", 205. This guy's nickname is Bear. Now, he has trimmed some weight. And I got into his conditioning, his weight, how he's feeling better. And I don't know, I got weird. It was like asking a woman about their weight. I'm like, is it okay to ask what your weight is, Bear?
When I got here, I was 302 pounds. Now I'm 273. I want to stay around 275 and put on more muscle. I've lost like 6% body fat. So I'm in a great place right now.
What'd you do? How'd you lose the weight?
Our nutritionist just put me on a plan, and at first it was really hard, but I stuck with it and stuck out, and shoot, I want to go to the NBA, so you got to do the things that you have to do to get there, so.
Why was it hard?
Just, I don't know, kind of discipline. At junior college, I could kind of do whatever I want type stuff. So I came here and they were like, if you don't do this, then you won't play. And they kept it real. So I'm glad they kept it real with me and I'm glad that I did it. I feel really good right now. So.
You say discipline. Is that in terms of the food you eat or working?
Working out. That's what it was. My mindset wasn't in a good spot, but they got me there. And LV, over the summer, I was with LV every single day. Like, it wasn't a day I wasn't in there. Like, he was telling me, like, if you keep going. And LV loves that stuff. So he just kind of got me going. So
we talked last year a lot to Rob Whaley about his weight loss. Yep. And he said when he lost it, you know, he got tremor, but he also didn't lose strength. Do you feel
I feel stronger. I feel stronger than I was. And I'm able to, like, get up and down the floor more. Like, in the scrimmage, I was bolting up and down and getting up and down, getting out in transition, getting wide open layups and stuff because I was running down and getting back on defense. But that's the type of things you got to have at this level. Like, whenever I was a JUCO, I could jog and walk around and stuff like that. But when you're here, it's like, if you don't get back, they're scoring on the other end. And I'm the five, so I got to help everybody else out. So I got to be able to get up and down.
UNLV runner rebel, one of the new guys, Bear Cherry, JUCO transfer, 6'11", 303. Nope. And by the way, it was 302. 6'11", 273. He's like, that's as light as I want to get. Okay. Wants to be a 275. He's a big guy.
Let's go. Yeah, that got me excited. I'm ready for some college basketball now. Well, good for him. That's really disciplined, and he put in the work.
I mean, it's here. I know you study everything, but the White family better get on the college basketball because – it's starting up.
UNLV's openers in
13 days, on the 4th. But it'll be a follow in terms of what they're going to have in the middle and the sort of physical play they can send out there. They've got a 7-foot freshman in Pop Jai. They've got Bernarby, who's 6'8", and probably 225. He's a really good athlete. They've got Whaley, who, I deep dive. I always want to know. I'm always like, hey, well, how much do you weigh? That's my relation there. They should fire back and be like, how much do you weigh? But Whaley was also a guy at 6'5", 6'6", who JUCO, I think he got as heavy. I don't want to misrepresent what he said, but I thought he was as heavy as, like, well, this might go back to high school, like 330. And last year he got into the two high 250s, low 260s. He's just a massive dude. But he was, like, muscular ripped at 262 or 258. So he's lost a little more weight. It's a good mix, and then I expect, like, I got a text or a tweet from someone. You know, I'm gonna let's put this on a shelf for a second. Let's take a break, pay the bills. We'll come back. We'll close out a little bit of UNLV, and also some words from Doug Gottlieb, radio host and college basketball coach, by the way. Double dipping.
Cofield and Company presents Grab Bag on ESPN Las Vegas.
Stick your hand in there, dude.
Thanks to the folks here at Oasis Bar and Grill hosting the show today. We're back in a couple of Tuesdays. I'm back a lot here, so I was here last night. We love this place. Come on down. Dinner specials every day. Great menu, deep menu, 24/7 breakfast. Today is Taco Tuesday, so you got tacos from $1.50 up to $3 a piece. Angel was like, you know what, I'll do all four. How about that?
He said they were delicious.
He enjoyed his plate.
Yep.
His favorite was the chicken. They've got carnitas, asada, and ground beef, and then they always have another Mexican specialty on the Taco Tuesday. So tonight you can come in and get chicken fajitas. So that's good. And if you don't like those, dozens and dozens of items on the menu. Alex is here. It's Cofield. Last couple minutes, I was talking about UNLV basketball. Opener's 13 days away. The one last thing I wanted to mention, I got a tweet from someone who said this all feels like it's going to be very mediocre. I don't think it will be. I think people need to appreciate what UNLV has in DJ Thomas,
yes,
who only showed us he didn't show all he can be, and he's gotten bigger and stronger. And the way the league defended him last year and other teams, they beat the crap out of him. You know, 18-year-old freshman, he can score. And I think last year, the first half of the season, he's like, you know what, young guy, blend in. You know, traditional point guard, I want to distribute. I think this year he's going to look to get his shots up, and I think he can average 17 or 18, which – that building around that is exciting.
Oh my gosh, last year was so impressive seeing him 18-year-old, like you said. I mean, he graduated high school early, right, and came in the spring. And then, so, yeah, at the beginning, I can see that blend in a little bit. But by the end, you could see
his
leadership even come out as a freshman.
They would clear out, and his job was to beat his man, get into the lane, yep. Either hit a shot, draw a foul, dish for someone to hit a three. He's really good. If he's 19 now, he's 19 going on like 35 when you talk to him. He's a basketball savant, and they have a good supporting cast around him, and I think they built the team they want with lots of shooters and then, you know, enough bigs that they can be super physical. And Rob Whaley, if healthy, and if he can log, you know, on average, say 25, 26 minutes a game, he's got to be more consistent, but he's devastating. He's a really good player. All right, Griffin, good job back in the studio. Angel, beautiful setup here. Flawless. Come on down any day of the week. Oasis, great place to hang out. I'm telling you. It's fun. Last night was a lot of fun. So I'll leave it at that. Tomorrow, we're at Battleborn Injury Lures, hanging out with Justin Watkins. Loaded show. And then, of course, we close out the week like we always do. Circa. And then on Friday, we'll be at Allegiant and at Treasure Island. Big football game on the way. UNLV and Boise State. We'll see you. Listen to the archives up on LVSportsNetwork.com or follow us on social media. Griffin with the videos.